is a project of the Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health and the Communicable Disease Services Programs. It is made possible with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More information can be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Public Service Announcements.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/KBOOMradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/KBOO.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/KBOO radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/KBOO.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Community Radio.
KBOO, Portland.
When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about blue, what a jolly boring thing to do.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is film producer Molly Asher. She's the producer of the movie Nomadland and was recently honored by the Portland Art Museum and the Northwest Film Center as part of their Cinema Unbound Awards. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Molly.
Thank you for having me.
So, Molly, you're in New York. We're doing this by Zoom.
I am.
So, The Film Center, the Northwest Film Center and the museum do the Cinema Unbound Awards. Now, it's the second year, and they like to honor stories that have been told in a different way or movies that kind of break with tradition. And the movie you produced, Songs My Brother Taught Me, and then The Rider, two kind of Western films. And then the big one, which won a Golden Globe, is called Nomadland. And I think people would know it as Frances McDormand driving around in a van, like living in a van, working at Amazon, all that stuff. It's an amazing film. It's, you know, you've got to see it if you haven't seen it. Why do you think they honored that? What's so different about the way Nomadland has been made?
Well, it was made untraditionally. The way that Chloe works is she'll write a script, Chloe Zhao. So she will, well, one of the unusual things about it is that it mixes actors and non-actors and not professional actors, people that are playing themselves. Our process isn't unusual as well of how we make the films. Chloe will write a script that will be from conversations that she's had with these real people, and she will fold their lives into her stories. So she'll have a narrative arc that she knows she wants to tell, and then she'll fill it with these lives. This is something I think that she's developed over the three films that we've made, along with her DP, Josh Richards. And then, you know, once we are on set, we work with a really small crew. This film only had about 23 people. Usually, you know, big movies have like hundreds of people. But we are small so that we can kind of fade into the background. Even our vehicles that we drove around in, our equipment vehicles, all that, they were cargo vans and vehicles that could look like they belonged to a nomad. And so we're small so that we can be nimble and move around easily. Sometimes there's more spontaneity that will be embraced in the way that she works, and having a small crew makes that possible.
Did you have an art education, or do you have memories of artists sort of, you know, that really grabbed you when you were younger?
I have a performance background, but not arts, not visual arts.
Oh, yeah?
I was a classically trained singer, actually, and dancer.
Really? Choir, opera, chorus?
Mm-hmm. I went to an arts high school, and I was always amazed by the visual artists. That's one thing that I've never had any kind of talent toward, but I think that, and I think film though is my avenue into that, because I think it captures something that words can't capture.
In the Nomadland, the main character played by Frances McDormand, she hears about a place to camp free on Bureau of Land Management land, you know, in the desert, and she goes and joins these campers, and it's very, you know, they're real people, right? They actually do this. So you showed up as a crew and you sort of insert yourselves, and some of it is scripted, obviously, and there's a story. Frances meets a woman who has cancer and is dealing with that, and there's a guy who's interested in Frances, things like that. How do you sort of insert yourselves? At some point, people are wandering around who know nothing about the film. Like, how do you keep them under control so you get your shot?
We do a lot of preparation and a lot of planning, and part of that is getting to know the people in the community. And so, you know, this RTR that you're talking about, this gathering of nomads, that was all planned. You know, we took months to prepare that, and it was casting specifically the nomads that are in it, casting their vehicles, and then, you know, finding the right spot to shoot that, and designing it to look like it was 2011 and not now, because those gatherings now have like 10,000 people a year. Back then it was just small like ours. But then, you know, once we had all of our cast and the vehicles, then the DP then created a map of where he was going to place all of the vehicles so that visually they were all in the right spot, knowing where the sun was going to be, where we were going to place Frances McDormand's van. And so it was all very carefully planned and then coordinated. And once they got there, all of the nomads then were just going to set up camp, basically, like put out their doormats and their chairs. And then they stayed there, you know, while we were shooting, like overnight. So it sort of became like a real RTR, but it was something that was completely crafted.
Was it just one night?
No, it was about, maybe we shot that for 3 or 4 days. Chloe will direct all of them. So, you know, there's that wonderful shot, that one shot that you might have seen in a trailer or a teaser of the film, where Frances McDormand is walking through the camp, and it's the camera's following her, and you're seeing some people over by a fire, you're seeing people doing some yoga exercises in the morning, you see somebody riding his bike. This was all choreographed. So that as she was passing, people were doing all these specific things. And that's I think, a really good example of what sometimes people think, that we're just catching these things spontaneously. But in fact, it was carefully planned. And the timing, too, is carefully planned on when the sun is setting. So we utilize magic hour every single day. So that's, you know, just as that this very beautiful time, just as the sun is just about to set. And in fact, we actually schedule our days around when this time is. But that shot was it's to look like morning, but we shot it at dusk.
What the nomads are doing is not that different than what the pioneers did.
Hey, Fern!
Gotta make the hole bigger. So the
I think Fern's part of an American tradition.
Oh, he's gonna come right through the glass.
My dad used to say, what's remembered lives. I maybe spent too much of my life just remembering.
Why don't you shoot at dawn?
You know, I'm not actually sure specifically if there's something with the light that Josh prefers dusk magic hour. I'm guessing that it has something to do with that.
So the look of the film is very, you know, there's a lot of this horizontal light. People, it lights people's faces in a really, really nice way. You know, it brings out their character. The way the shots are framed, could you just talk about the director and how she sets up her individual shots?
Well, she wants to focus very much on the face, and like really make focusing on the face so you can see all of the natural expressions and the natural wrinkles, beautiful wrinkles. And nature is also a big part of how she's framing the shots. And so she's framing the character within their environment. So I think that's, you know, the wide look is really to be able to capture all of that big nature.
She also shoots like from behind, you know, walking behind someone a lot. Is there psychological meaning in that?
Yes, I think so. I think it's so that we're walking with them and we're seeing what they're seeing.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is film producer Molly Asher. She produced Nomadland and a couple of other indie films you might know, The Rider and Songs My Brother Taught Us. So Nomadland is based on a book by a woman who used to write for The Oregonian, Jessica Bruder. Did you have to just take her characters and just sort of reimagine them, or were you just free to find your own new people?
Well, the way that this all came about is our producing partners on this, Peter Spears and Frances McDormand, came across this book and they read it and thought that it would make a good film. And so they optioned it from Jessica. And then they saw The Rider and thought Chloe might be the perfect person to adapt this book. And so they imagined in the book that they imagined that the adaptation would be that Frances would play Linda May. Because Linda May in the book, there's a real narrative there of her being a van dweller and then eventually buying land. Chloe, she's like, I want to do as I do with my other films, and Linda May will play Linda May, and Swanky will play Swanky, Bob Wells will play Bob Wells, and then Frances will be a character that she'll create, and this will be somebody who is sort of beginning this path of van dwelling, and through that path, she's meeting all of these people. So she's sort of like the glue connecting us to this world. Jessica came to set actually when we were doing the RTR scenes, Jessica the author. And I mean, I think she just loved seeing it come to life, and to see all of the people that she'd spent so much time, you know, when she was researching the book, then being a part of this mm-hmm. as well.
So they were her people from the book.
Yes. Some of the people we were not necessarily, but we're part of the community. But yes, so Swanky, Linda May, and Bob were in the book. Also, Sue Ann, the woman who does the wonderful lesson on 5-gallon buckets, she's in the book as well.
And Jessica Bruder wrote a book about Burning Man. So there is something Burning Man-ish about, you know, this gathering in the desert of...
Certainly.
Radical yeah. self-reliance.
Mm-hmm.
You as a producer, what do indie producers do? I think the word producer is very broad and we see it thrown around.
I actually teach producing right now at Rutgers University, and it's a 14-week class. It's kind of like a producer is there from the beginning to the end. And so from, you know, there's a development period of time. That's when you're either, you know, working on the script or get optioning a book, finding the right writer and director, finding the financing. And then once you have all of those things, then in pre-production, the producer is finding the right crew, finding the right locations, setting up a signatory with the unions, overseeing all of the creative and logistical elements that will be needed for production. And then during production, the producer is on set managing it all, but also making sure that the director's vision is that the director has the tools they need to execute their vision. Oftentimes, you know, watching dailies and letting the director know if they think that we should grab something that we didn't, you know, for the story to work. And then in post-production, that's the editing phase, and when the composer comes on and the sound people. So the producers involved in bringing those people on, the right people for the project, giving notes to the editor. And then when there's distribution and marketing, the producer continuing to make sure that the vision is being kept true. We like worked with Searchlight, for example. They would send edits of the trailer and we would give notes, and working with their marketing team as to the types of like the poster and things like that. So a producer is really there from start to finish.
And you do also the afterlife of the movie, it's life on Netflix or wherever it ends up, and you make sure people get paid, 10 years time. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's administrative things like that too, that we make sure, And yeah, I mean, I guess there is no finish really for a producer. Like it does continue each film.
Right.
A lot of times, like they go off and do their next film, but a producer really has to maintain it.
So you know Amy Dodson pretty well at the Northwest Film Center. She compared it to being the director is like being pregnant, and then being a producer is like raising the child for the rest of their life.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great, I love that.
So if the director, say Chloe, who you work with several times now, if she wants a certain look, if she wants fire at night, which is her signature, if she wants horizontal sunshine or, the golden hour, or she wants freeway, or she wants Amazon, like those amazing shots inside Amazon, which are like Andreas Gursky photos, the scale. What's your job to get her those visual images?
With her projects, I do a lot of the obtaining the permission from locations. Like for the shots in the desert, getting a permit from the Bureau of Land Management, or getting permits from the Badlands National Park for the beet harvest. That was an interesting one because we were asking for a real factory to let us go in there and have an actor play this part of it's a trained job, finding a beet harvest that would be willing to let us come and work there. So I love doing that kind of stuff. Sometimes it's originally in her script, there was a scene in the Badlands where there was a campfire and we were working, but however, in the Badlands, you're not allowed to have campfires. And so I spent a long time trying to figure out a way safely that they would feel comfortable to let us do it. Ultimately, when Chloe learned that it was really just something that's not allowed, she didn't want to have it in the film because authenticity is really, really important to her. And my job is to kind of do everything that I can to get her what she needs in order to tell her story.
Lucky people that can travel anywhere.
Yes, ma'am. I know.
And they sometimes call you nomads.
My mom says that you're homeless. Is that true?
No, I'm not homeless. I'm just
houseless.
Not the same thing, right?
No.
My husband worked at the USG mine in Empire. I was a substitute teacher.
It is a tough time right now. You may want to consider early retirement.
I need work. I like work.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. What about Amazon? I just thought, was this an Amazon movie?
No, it's not an Amazon movie. People always ask like how we got that location, but it was actually the easiest one. So we just had asked Frances to write to them. And so she wrote an email asking if we could tell them a little bit about the film. And they said yes.
Oh, okay. So her kind of star power got it for you. Because, if I wanted to go and do a story inside Amazon, there's no way they would let me in. They're super careful about the media.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rather than me giving them a call, we're like, let's just start at the top.
Well, how many days were you in the warehouse?
Just one day, and it was our last day of the shoot too.
So you were in Empire, Nevada. Tell us about that. It was like the factory town that closed down. That's part of the story, but you went to the National Empire, which is kind of near where Burning Man is held. In Nevada. Tell us about Empire and what you liked about it.
Well, Empire is, when we were walking around doing a scout of it, we were just commenting, the DP was saying how like, you can't build this kind of set. This is so inspiring because it's already right there. You can feel the lives that lived there. Visually, it's so evocative because you're seeing all of these houses that are now boarded up. It was moving, really. And that's one of the wonderful things I think about shooting on location is that rather than building, or working in a studio, the life that exists in these real places infuses the film with life.
Mm-hmm. What kind of plant was it that closed down?
Gypsum. So gypsum is used to make drywall. And so after the financial crisis, when there was no one building any houses or anything anymore, the plant shut down and everybody in that community worked there. And so they lost their job and they lost their homes. And so this is the story of a Fern who her husband had passed away a few years prior to that, but then she loses her home and decides to just go on the road and, you know, work seasonal jobs around the country. And sort of her idea of what her life was going to be, an American dream in a way, didn't happen. And so she's making her own American dream.
Kind of been happening a lot last year, right? People leaving the Bay Area, New York City, just because it's cheaper to travel, you know, or go live remotely and stay connected using the internet. Do you think there's another story brewing up there for you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that everybody's experience during this time can make Nomadland so relatable, you know, and also like all the little things matter so much more now, you know, like going to get milk at the grocery store is like a much bigger deal. And that's those little things are really matter in the nomadic life as well, because you have to have minimal stuff, but you also have to plan when you're going your life, you know, planning where you're going to stop to take a shower. Like a lot of people take showers at gyms where they'll have a membership, but the little things in life that you take for granted become much more important in that kind of life. And I think also we're realizing the same thing.
And also, you know, we're like, you are sitting in front of a beige wall, not the most compelling of visual images, but the world outside, if you were free to travel, you know, and just do what you wanted, you would see the whole of America, you know, and just all its amazing visual beauty. So I feel like we're all kind of trapped in these little screens and rooms waiting for, you know, to get out again.
That's why I love filmmaking, because I love traveling and seeing all those places that I wouldn't necessarily have seen. And we shot our two films prior to that, Songs My Brothers Taught Me and The Rider. We shot them both on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. I think the Badlands are one of the most beautiful places in the entire world. That land is also really, really inspiring as well. And when you go out there, it's kind of like the rest of the world goes away, and you're just like you're in it.
Have you been able to get out and about during the last year, or you've just been trapped in New York?
Yeah, I only go to the park that's near me. Right. I did go out to LA for the premiere, the Telluride in LA premiere. But other than that, I have been in my apartment, and every once in a while, well, I try to exercise in the park that's nearby. But
my name is Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Molly Asher. She's the producer of Nomadland, the movie, and the winner of the Portland Art Museum and Northwest Film Center Cinema Unbound Award. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Molly.
Thank you so much.
One of the things I love most about this life is that there's no final goodbye. I've met hundreds of people out here, and I don't ever say a final goodbye. Let's just say, I'll see you down the road. And I do. I see them again. And I can be certain in my heart, I'll see you again.
Up just for show, see them as they really are. But the people in my brain, two new pens. chance to have a go. I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Andy, take a little snooze. Tie him up when he's fast asleep. Send him on a pleasant cruise. When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue. What a jolly boring thing to do.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 16 de marzo del 2020.